Lord, Ben Lawrence. Hey,
it's,
here we go. It's here and it's good. Everybody loves it.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going all right. I have no guarantee of how loud this is going to be. I have the new microphone. It's sitting in front of me on the desk.
Okay.
And it looks like it's like if I'm talking just like this, right? It's peaking. Not bad, but I mean, you know, it's taking up the whole thing.
Right. Well, it sounds fine from my end.
Well, yeah, but you're listening through my headphones. You're not seeing. You know, I'm going to be giving you a different.
Yes, I know.
A different thing. A different thing, Ben. You know
a different
what I mean.
Thing.
Yeah. So, I
today's
almost
Thursday.
Didn't, yeah.
January 12th. Tomorrow's Friday the 13th. This is episode 359 of the Goody Lawrence podcast.
Nice. I'm just starting to say that with other numbers besides 69.
Nice.
So far, it's been nice. Because all math is good, as far as I'm concerned. So the thing that I kind of want to tell you about, and it's a little embarrassing.
Okay.
But it is something that happened. So I want to come clean, as it were. 359, episode 359 should be called TMI, Ben. That's the, so I was sleeping. I was having a dream, which I don't exactly remember. Don't remember the dream, but in the dream, I had a pleasant, warm sensation in my pants. And I was like, instantly, it was just like when I stepped in dog poop in France, where I was like, oh, that's nice and soft. And then I was like, oh, no, dog poop. In the same way, I was like, well, that's nice and warm. Oh, no. Have I just peed my pants? And it turns out, this is the only way I can describe it, I peed my pants while I was sleeping, something that I haven't done in decades, right? It was such a minor amount that I actually had a moment where I was like, do I just keep sleeping? And then I was like, well, no, because I can't be trusted at this point in time. We already know that I have the capability of sleeping and going, oh, this is nice. And therefore, I got up, you know, changed my pants and everything and peed, but I was afraid to go back to sleep because I was like, I was
understood.
Thinking to my body, you can no longer be trusted. What is happening?
Yeah.
And I was at the drugstore and I was like, do I buy a pair of like, is this how I start wearing Depends before I'm even 50? But then I was like, probably not.
I would say no. I'd say if this becomes a routine, if this becomes a habit of yours, then maybe. But
if this
an isolated incident.
Hey, ladies, everybody. And gentlemen. Oh, hold on. Yeah. Now get a load of this. Shh. I gotta go to sleep first.
You're never gonna believe.
That's my problem. I can only do it once. And then somebody comes up and whispers in my ear. I'm like, oh, apparently this could become a regular thing. Yeah. But no, so the basic, thought that I have based on, you know, my experience and what occurred is that I, you know, it probably won't happen again, but the thing that's bugging me is that I have no concept of what it was that set it off, you know, like some people are like, oh, I drank a whole lot and I ended up peeing myself in the bed. I'm not, you know, as far as I know, I'm not sick. I haven't, you know, I wasn't drinking. I didn't change it. The only thing that was different from last night and the nights before it is that all yesterday I didn't drink any coffee. As we've discussed, I quit caffeine for a while, and then I got back into coffee, and I like coffee. It's good. I didn't drink it at all yesterday. I can't imagine that not drinking coffee is something that makes someone pee themselves. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. It's probably, maybe it's just because we're getting old, man.
Yeah.
I often, a recurring dream, you know what, since you bring that up, I'm surprised that I actually don't wet the bed more often, because a reoccurring dream that I have is trying to find a clean bathroom because I gotta go.
Yep.
And basically just urinating anywhere.
You know, here's something that people listening to this who haven't lived in Seattle may not know. There is a war against people who need to urinate in Seattle. Is that
only in Seattle? Is that not everywhere?
Well,
where there's a large houseless population.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, that's a good point. But I'm speaking specifically. I'm not saying that in Edwardsville they'd let anybody use the bathroom, but much like parking, right, using the bathroom is something that isn't policed as much here in Seattle. All right, I'm looking at this thing about how I'm peaking, and I have a question for you, Ben. I have two choices. One is leaving the microphone at the level that it's at now, just constantly, or I could turn it down. The problem is that if I turn it down, it's going to be inconsistent. You know what I mean?
Like, for 7 minutes, just turn it down so you're not peaking.
Okay. Yeah. Here I go. Wait, is this how I... Why is it not... Oh, do I have to stop it? Oh, that can't be right.
Is there not a knob? Is this... I'm assuming this is a USB microphone?
Yeah, there's a... Oh, hey, look at that.
Is there a knob on the mic itself?
Oh, that's no fun. There is a knob, but the knob is for the volume of the headphones that are hooked into it. But the thing is that there is a volume on the track itself. Okay, so this is playback volume.
Yeah. If you're using Audacity, there's a volume for the mic, but I don't know if it will...
It won't allow me to adjust it while it's recording.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, well, I'll just leave it how it is.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's... And I really hate to say this. It's at a very pleasant setting for someone who speaks at a regular volume. This is a problem of mine... And I understand it. So hey, Ben,
this is Paul.
Ben gonna guess the news, nerd edition.
Uh oh.
Do you know what has happened in the nerd community this week that has people upset?
I think I know what it is, but I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite specific on the details.
Yeah, so let's try it.
What has happened is Hasbro, which owns Wizards of the Coast. You know where I'm going with this.
Yep.
Yes. They have changed I think it's the open gaming license for Dungeons & Dragons, which
that's right.
No longer allow people to create their own games based on the D&D rules.
Well, it's
something,
you're close.
Something like that.
You're very
close. I'm in the ballpark.
Yeah.
I think I won. I think I got this one right.
They haven't. You're absolutely correct. They have changed. They have changed this license.
The end result is they're trying to get more money out of the players. That's
right.
People are angry about.
There is a leak of a change. And that's the big thing, is that the change hasn't happened yet. There's a leak about the change. Okay. And the basic thing is that they've changing the terms and conditions so that they make more money. That third party and the third parties who create content based on D&D, give them license to do what they want to with that content, and they can't the third party people can't sue them, basically. So here's the fun thing, and this is why I bring it up, because it people are mad about this, but I liked it a lot. In one of the online communities, somebody posted, if you talk about this at all, there are two different ways you would be violating the community. Number one is, if this leak is false, then you're engaging in trolling, which is against our rules, and you'll be booted. If it's true, then you're engaging in talking about a copywritten material before it's out to the public, which is also a violation of our rules, in which case you'll be booted. So they did this fun little thing of, you can't talk about this at all, which I thought was neat.
Yeah.
In an evil way.
I did see a Reddit post. Was it a Reddit post? Where somebody claimed that, I think it was a Hasbro CEO, like, their impression of this person says that they consider customers to be an annoying blockade between Hasbro and its money.
Yeah, that's correct. That I heard that as well. That was a post that somebody who claims that they work for Wizards of the Coast made.
Yeah.
And they mentioned also that they're watching D&D Beyond subscriptions to see how people are taking it. And so they encourage people to cancel their subscriptions. Now, I'm not canceling my D&D Beyond subscription because I don't have one. I have a user account, but I'm not paying them any money. So for some people, I might be causing problems. But I can't remember what my username and password is, and I don't care to remember it. But the other big thing is that Paramount Plus, I think it's Paramount Plus, it might be Peacock, I think it's Paramount Plus, one of the, like, sort of, and I hate to say this about Peacock and Paramount Plus, but one of those, like, lower tier subscription services.
You're not wrong.
Just announced that they're doing a limited series based on Dungeons and Dragons. And someone was like, who decided to make this announcement right now?
Right.
Because they should have waited a little while, at least. So that's the news. Hasbro is waiting to see exactly what they what they're going to do. And all this reminds me, if you remember, at one point in time, I was saying, boy, I'd love to work for Hasbro. And I was trying to, like, get working for them. I was like, whoa, you all right?
Yeah, I kicked the table.
Our couch is broken at my house. we broke some of the slats or some of the springs or something. But I don't mind sitting in the broken part. It's not really broken, but it is sort of.
I mean, I don't even have a couch, so.
Yeah.
You're already one up on me with your broken
I feel as though, again, we've talked about this before. There is a part in the human psyche that just goes, maybe I just lose everything in a fire or something and just start over. You know, I feel as though this is the thing, that feeling that we have, and you've seen it before. You and I know people who have been through fires where people have lost everything. It's not great by any stretch of the imagination. The only thing I can think of is that little voice inside your head maybe is there so that if it ever does happen to you, you can go, well, here's your chance, buddy.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I do, like, living in the area that I do, I almost kind of, I don't bank on this, but I figure that at some point there's going to be some event that will be a hard reset for me. Be it an apartment fire, an earthquake where my building gets destroyed, or like a mass flooding event or something, you know?
I think you live in what is known as the liquefaction zone. I might be wrong about that, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, it's not bedrock, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Second, you know, the place in Belltown where I live, it's not it's not like total fill like parts of Sodo are, and like Harbor Island. The coastline, the natural coastline, is further west of me, but it's still like glacial tilt.
So yeah, that'll be fun to find out exactly how it all works.
I had a geology professor when I was in college, and he said that the safest building in Seattle is the old Rainier Brewery, which is now Artist Lofts, but the old Rainier Brewery, because it is the only building in Seattle, and I got to take this guy's word for it because he was my geology professor, that was built on solid bedrock. Where the brewery is the only exposed solid bedrock in all of Seattle proper, I guess. And the Rainier Brewery is on it.
For those of you who don't know, when you're going to the Mount Baker stop for the Seattle Light Rail, you go by the Rainier Brewery. And it's nice to see it.
I had friends who lived there at one point, and it's... It's a fun little quirky artist community now.
Is it in Georgetown? Or is it in Sodo?
It's sort of in between.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking too. Georgetown. Hey, what's Georgetown like these days? Is it still or is it There was at least a little bit of a time where there was one of my favorite neon signs in Georgetown, which is just a woman going shh, like her finger to her lips, letting people know, hey, don't let people know that Georgetown is kind of cool.
I don't know. You know, I haven't been down there in a long time. There are a couple of joints down there. Like, McCandless and I would always go to this place called Smarty Pants, which is, I hope it's still there, actually. And there's the 9-Pound Hammer, which was another bar down there. There's a number of, like... It was like a warehouse district. And so they've turned all the old warehouses that have survived into, like, event spaces. So, like, friends of mine had a wedding reception down there in an old warehouse that probably used to, like, manufacture mercantiles of some sort.
Like, Fantagraphics had a presence down there. They might still.
They might still be there. The place where I bought my Hammer, Vespa was down there.
Yep, that's right. 9-Pound Hammer might also have been done by the same people that did Full Tilt Ice Cream. I think. I want to say that the owner of 9-Pound Hammer did that as well. Full Tilt, not in Georgetown, but in Columbia City there was one. Yeah. And Columbia City was the other, like, okay, this place is actually sort of cool. We saw a movie there. We saw Sky Captain in Columbia City.
Yeah.
And you're frozen. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you're back. The software I use to stream the show, it's blinking at me, but I'm looking at feed, and it appears to be working, so... Who knows?
Yeah, no, you full, just full tilt paused ice cream, for a little a, bit, and now you're back. Yeah.
Full Tilt Ice Cream, a destination of our film location.
That is correct. And it's really fun. City Museum, you know of it. Betty and I go there more often now because I am a member, which is nice. And we have learned that there are video games there, some of which were at Full Tilt, like Galaga, for example, and some pinball machines, and they're free for patrons.
Nice.
Anyone who's there can go in. Yeah. Hey, Ben.
There was every once in a while, GameWorks. Every once in a while at GameWorks, all you did was just pay a cover charge. I don't remember what it was. And then any video game was free. Which was a lot of fun. Because I'm terrible at video games.
what I was going to say, and you can tell already, I think, where we're going with this. I think you and I have one of the largest lags we've had in the show for some time.
All right, you want to do this?
Yeah, okay, here we go. I'm going to do the count. It's going to be 1, 2, 3, and then clap. So we're going to clap on 4. 1, 2, 3. Wow. Now you go.
That was... Okay, the same thing. Clap on 4. And 1, 2, 3. That's like a full, like, 5 seconds.
Yeah. But we'll deal with it. We'll deal with it. I think it might be on your end this time.
When the internet flashes like that, here at the theater, that seems to muck up the stream. Yeah. Actually, speaking about the Vespa shop, I was remembering the other day where when I owned my Vespa, that I had to take it down there to Georgetown to get repairs. So I ride it down there, and they needed it to have it overnight. And so there's a bus stop directly across the street from the Vespa dealership called Big People Scooters. And so I'm like, all right, well, I got to take the bus home. And I walk across the street, have no idea. This is before, like, even before I had a smartphone. No idea when the next bus was coming. And it's raining. It's raining so hard. And there's no shelter. It's just like a signpost on the side of the road down there in Georgetown. And so I'm like, I could, like, go back and just hang out inside the store and wait for the bus. But by the time I saw the bus, I would have missed it. So I'm just standing there. So I stood there waiting for it, and it's raining, and I put my helmet on just because I didn't, I was just getting soaked. And so every once in a while, I would see the guys who worked there. They would, like, peek out the window, and all they would see is this guy wearing all this motorcycle gear and this motorcycle helmet just standing on the other side of the street, just, like, waiting for the bus. And I probably waited a good half an hour for that stupid bus to show up.
Yeah.
End of story.
I mean, this is one of the reasons why I moved out of that house in Highland Park. If you remember, the reason was because the bus would come every half hour, and it would be like, 10 minutes on either side of that half hour. And so I would never know if I actually made the bus or not, and all that kind of thing. And then they switched it so that the bus was only going to come once an hour. And I was like, I can't do it. Impossible. But I do think about the fact that I would have paid off that house by now had I stayed in it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you except, of like course, that I didn't have a job. Mortgage? I had a 20-year mortgage. And when I lost my job, I wouldn't have been able to pay it. So I would have lost it anyway.
Right.
But... still kind of, and also it had a bad foundation and stuff. It wasn't a great investment. It was not a great investment.
The land itself might have been worth more than the house it's on, just absolutely. The way real estate's going on here.
Also, you have to remember that there was a man who could turn into a raccoon who lived under the house, and that was a problem.
I do remember taking you home one day, and I don't know, I think it was like picking something up from inside the house, or maybe we were just hanging out and this is when I was leaving, but there was like a loud screeching sound down the street, and we were in the front yard and we heard this screeching sound coming closer and closer and closer to us. So you and I actually hunkered down. We got down below like the hedge line just so nobody could see us. And it was this car. I guess what we eventually found out, I think, was that the car had either gotten into an accident or just broke on its own, and one of the wheels had seized, but whoever was driving the car kept going.
Yeah. There was another time... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think at the time we were afraid that like gunshots were going to ring out.
Yeah. The other thing, near that area, South Park, where Jennifer and I later moved... There was a situation where I was waiting for the bus with this other guy. We were talking. It was when I was on my little rant about how he was doing stuff that actually took place in physical space, whereas my stuff was all virtual. And so, you know, he, in the end, was going to probably do better than me. And, you know, he had more of an impact, that kind of thing. You know, talking to people at the bus stop, right. Making yeah. friends. And then as we're talking, this car just drives through a red light and slams into one of the walls that holds up the light rail. One of the either holds up the light rail or an overpass or something. There was a wall that was attached yeah. to some sort of architectural feature. And it turned out, we found out later, that he had had a heart attack while driving.
Yeah.
And had actually, I believe he had actually died behind the wheel. And so what we had witnessed was a corpse.
Driving a car.
Which is where I came up with the idea for Moto Zombies. But no. And my condolences to him and his family. Unsensitive. Not just insensitive. I don't know what the difference is. Ben, it's weird when we've got this lag because I'm watching your face. You're actually reacting to something that I said earlier. And I'm like, well, yeah. Why does Ben feel that way? And
But it's know. Not. It's not connected to what you're actually saying in the moment.
Exactly. So, let's see.
We got lots ways of stuff, to go, too.
Lots of stuff I can't talk about, as per usual.
Right.
Just in general.
Guessing these are work things.
Yeah. I just got the CD player in my car freed up. If this makes sense, I used to have a stand for my cell phone, or for my mobile phone, that plugged into the CD player. So it was a really kind of ingenious device. You have a sort of a flat part that goes into where the CD would go into. And you tighten this nut, and this lever raises up from the little flat part and wedges itself inside of where the CD is supposed to be, so that it forms an anchor there, right. Which is really nice.
And it didn't trigger any sort of mechanism that would try to eject it if you hit the eject button?
But at some point in time, we decided that we wanted to play CDs again, so I just got a new thing that just goes on the dash, and the phone just sort of slots in, which is really nice. And we just bought some CDs. And like Jennifer got the Best of the Foo Fighters. Betty got some vinyl records. And one of the vinyl records that she got was Gorilla's Demon Days. And she got, it's a 2-disc set. Again, these are albums, vinyl. And we got 2 copies of the same vinyl record in the double set.
Oh, no.
The same sleeve, the same thing. So we took it back, and he gave us our thing back, and she ended up just getting Gorillaz. But here's something that I think you and I are going to be able to talk about this, because I think that you... maybe aren't a huge fan, but at least you know about Pink Floyd, The Wall.
I know about it. It's been a while since I've listened to it.
Did you see the film or not?
I did not see the film.
Well, here's... I did not see the film. See, because there's a part of it where Pink, our lead character, a guy named Pink Floyd... played by the guy who did Live Aid, whose name I can't remember right now, because I'm thinking of Sid Barrett, and that is, of course, not the guy. That's the original lead singer for Pink Floyd. But as you may know, Roger Waters did most of the vocals for Pink Floyd, The Wall, and also wanted to be the main character. But they cast this other guy instead, whose name, again, I knew before this conversation started. it's really weird that I don't. But But basically, the idea is Bob Geldof. That's right. Betty wanted to watch it, and you know, it's got some tough parts in it. But we did it, and she said to me after it was over, "Well, it was okay, but I didn't think that it was sympathetic enough towards Pink. Like when you listen to the album, you relate to him more." And I really think that it might have done the album a disservice, the film. So I was like, well, maybe there's a concert film that we can watch of it. And Roger Waters put on something that was like in 2014 that he recorded, which was Pink Floyd The Wall as done by, it was Roger Waters The Wall. He did the thing in concert. There's a different guy singing the parts that the other guy, David Gilmour, did, that sort of thing. And he made it, like, The Wall was already sort of anti-war, but he made it a little bit more anti-war. He did a couple of things, and he did it about being an older guy now. And it was really, yeah, really nice.
His perspective has changed.
And they were like, we were watching it, we're like, is he going to do In the Flesh part two? You know, where he like yells racial slurs at people and stuff like that. And he did. It turned out all right. But in it, you know, that one looks Jewish is one of the things he says. And there were some suggestions that he's anti-Semitic for certain reasons, and yeah, in it he's dressed in this fascist thing, and he points again to the audience and goes, "There, a Jew," like that. But the thing is, and I am being very careful with what I say here, part of the thing that he's being called out for is the same thing that some Jewish people in the United States are being called out for, which is criticism of Israel for their treatment of Palestinians. So, you know, it's one of those situations where I feel as though, and you know, I'm no authority, obviously, on what is anti-Semitism and what isn't. But I feel as though, you know, the accusations of it may be, maybe more, his stance may be more nuanced than, you know, people may be giving him credit for. Yeah. That's what I'll say. But in the same way, I just watched a show where he's dressed up in fascist gear, pointed to a member of his audience going, "There, a Jew." So, you know, it's interesting.
I don't know the context, but I'm assuming that he's like commenting on
he's playing a role, right? Exactly. Yeah. It's satire.
There's a lot of sincere racism or other sorts of like bigotry are excused by it being satire these days.
Yeah.
And so it's, I don't know, are we getting to the point where you can no longer satirize something without being accused of actually doing the thing?
Well, this is the thing that I think, and this is one of the reasons I thought you and I would be able to talk about this a little bit because of our own work and things like that, which is this. I feel as though satire has a place that is important, especially in literature, also in film and stuff like that. But one of the benefits of satire, and I think, again, search the audio, we may have talked about this already. One of the benefits of satire is that it is most useful when you are speaking to a specific audience that needs to hear the message. And what I mean by that is this, like, a black person in the United States of America does not need to see a white person satirizing white racists, because you're not teaching them anything that they don't already know. It is not useful. It is not. And this is one of those situations where people oftentimes are offended by, in this case, like black comedians, things like that, when they make a statement to a white audience who, like, you know, has a problem with something, saying this isn't for you. Because oftentimes the white people will go, it's not for everything. Why can't I do this or whatever? But a lot of what it means, or how dare you? How dare you tell me that it's not? Notice how we both go Southern whenever we. that's another story. But the thing I was going to say is that it's not exclusionary like I'm not allowing you to listen to it. What they're saying is you're not going to appreciate this because you don't have the cultural nuance that you need. But the main thing I would say is that satire still has a place and can still be done, but it is, I'm not going to say unnecessary isn't the right word. It is less effective in a world like we live in now with the internet as a perfect distribution system, where anyone has the chance to see anything.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I've said this before, but you know, when you buy a Mad Magazine and you read Mad Magazine, the editors of Mad Magazine have an idea of what the Mad Magazine audience is. And they write
people
stuff.
People are paid large amounts of money to figure that out.
Yep. They write stuff for that audience.
Yeah.
Right? So you know, a parent reading Mad Magazine that they find in their kid's room might say, this is trash. I can't believe, you know, what it, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas, you know, so The Onion, I mean, I think we've talked about The Onion and its...
its role in society.
It's fun little turn once it got onto the internet of people taking it seriously. People who had seen it before. When you see The Onion as a print edition, you can look at it and you're like, oh, okay, this is a satirical publication. It doesn't look like the New York Times or whatever. But on the internet, the New York Times and The Onion have the same exact real estate. Your computer screen.
There's one more thing to this, I think, as well, in that when you pick up a print copy of The Onion, like, you are purposefully buying a magazine, which means you are going to read the magazine. Whereas if you see an Onion headline, you're just seeing a headline. And you've been conditioned on the internet to say, oh, it's a news headline on the internet, so this must be true. Hence the birth of the subreddit Ate the Onion.
Which I don't know about. Is it basically people who did just that?
Yeah, it's people who, like, mostly it's people who, like, get upset over things that The Onion has said that it's obviously satire. Like, an Onion tweet saying, like, Tom Brady pays off officials to deflate footballs before Super Bowl. You know, Onion is a lot more funny than that. But then you get somebody who replies to that tweet saying, I can't believe Brady would be such a blatant cheater, you know.
Yeah. And I saw something very similar to this that happened on TikTok, where people, or TikTok or Twitter, where people will say something as a joke and people will take them seriously and run with it. There was one... as you know, The Last of Us coming out.
Yeah.
And said something like, you know, video games, you know, used to be that you'd put your quarter in and you use your joystick to move around and jump on enemies and the enemies would die. The Last of Us changed all that, says showrunner. And people were like, this guy, he doesn't know anything about video games. But it was a quote that she made up. Now, it was a quote made up with the idea that, you know, people were saying that the guy who runs The Last of Us doesn't know video games. But it was a joke that she made up, and she had to come on and say it because everybody was getting mad.
Yeah.
That he said that. Now, here's the other thing that I'll mention. You know this as well as I do, probably, but maybe not. The Last of Us video game was made by a guy, written by this dude, as sort of, you know, the main producer of the game. And he is one of the showrunners of the TV show. So, the guy who's doing The Last of Us TV show, I think you know this already, but I'm not positive. If you don't, you're going to be excited, was the guy who did Chernobyl.
Yeah. Craig Mazin.
So, and I think you listened to a podcast that Craig did or something.
There was a companion podcast for Chernobyl hosted by Peter Sagal of NPR's Wait, yeah. Wait, Don't Tell Me, where he and Craig talked about the episodes. It was actually really fascinating if you enjoyed the show.
So the basic idea is that the suggestion is, because he doesn't know anything about video games, the TV show is going to be bad.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because the TV show isn't going to be a video game.
That, and with any adaptation, we have to deal with that, because you are going to piss off a certain subset of the fans of the video game because it doesn't conform to what their impression of a TV adaptation is going to be.
Yes.
Can't please everybody. It's going to be a fantastic TV show. I'm going to watch it. I've never played the video game in my life.
And you're not going to have to. That's the other thing. You really exactly. aren't. I can't wait. There's a character who people hated in The Last of Us Part 2 that Jennifer and I really liked. Her name's Abby. And she did not conform to the regular female beauty standard. She was this girl who watched her... And I say this girl because she was a girl at the time this happened. Hold on. This girl who watched her dad... spoilers, by the way. Watched her dad get killed. And so she started working out, and she's got this hugely powerful build. And like, is... You know, it's fun to play because she can throw things around and, like, beat people up and stuff. But there are so many people who are like, oh, you know, she looks like crazy, and this isn't good, and why can't she be pretty?
I can't have sexual fantasies about a video game character.
Right. And then there's the other thing of you know, again, spoilers, Ellie is a lesbian, and so there's all the, why can't we get somebody that we can have a relationship with?
Why does this game have to be so woke?
Exactly. That's
they're shoving their sexuality down my throat.
They're holding me down.
I would prefer you to slip it gingerly down my throat.
Exactly.
A little bit at a time. Let me tell you how fast to go.
Again, we talk about the Onion. There's something. There's an article that they had that was something very similar to that. That was pretty funny. But yeah, there is. It's. You can't get away from it. You know, you live in the world. You should, you know, it's like, what am I supposed to tell my children when they see two men holding hands in public? And it's like, you know, the great part about that is that you are the parent of the children. You get to decide what you say. What am I supposed to, are you asking me to parent your children? At this point. But this is honestly the thing, and I've mentioned this before maybe, but the reason we started watching Pink Floyd the Wall is because Betty was interested in it. Again, I thought it was great that you know, she said they don't, you know, they don't treat Pink as well. And then again, you know, we're watching this thing, and there are times in the Roger Waters thing where you end up, at least me, you end up tearing up because, you know, here's a young boy who lost his dad before he ever had a chance to meet him in a war, and he's talking about war and he's doing all this stuff. It's all very poignant, and it makes you feel sad. And what a great thing to see Roger Waters grow up, right? And this is the same music, the same everything, but getting a perspective on it, you know, about,
yeah,
this is something about how war affects children.
It also probably hits home for him a little bit harder these days because he is himself a parent.
Yep. Oh, and his son plays keyboards on the tour, which is interesting. Then again, the Ooh, I Need a Dirty Woman, whatever song that is off the album, still on the album, still there's a, it is really kind of interesting. There's this you know, poignant thing about, you know, there's a quote that they have from Eisenhower about how I'm not going to get this right, this is a paraphrasing, but every gun created, every warship launched, every, you know, bomb dropped represents a theft from people who don't have enough to eat, which is a, you know, pretty bold statement and all that. And then you cut to this woman dancing around and trying to sneak into a place to meet a rock star. And it's just a hard, like, okay, we're still doing this. We're still, this yeah. part is still here. And I guess maybe that's part of his life. Ben, you and I never had to really deal with that as performers. One good thing with performance artists, really. I think it's nice that we did have fans. We did have people that came and talked to us and stuff like that. I don't think that we ever had like fanboys or fangirls or anything like that. We didn't have people who were like...
There's one moment I remember. I don't know if you remember this too. I wouldn't call it a fanboy moment, but it was a sort of weird moment for me where I had to think, is this a sincere appreciation or is this kid like making fun of us? It was after performance at Freehold. And we had done something with marshmallows, like we often had done.
Yeah.
And somebody wanted you and I to sign these marshmallows. Do you remember this?
I think I remember it because I remember it was hard to get the pens to work.
Yeah.
Or whatever the writing utensil was.
It's probably a ballpoint pen, which is you need a Sharpie to write on a marshmallow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember like signing this marshmallow for this guy, and I'm like, is this sincere or is he just kind of making fun of us?
I think I mean it's granted after the fact and all that. I think that we are in a unique position where being sincere and making fun of us can happen both at the same time. But we did get interviewed at one point, which was kind of neat, for somebody's like sketch.
Oh yeah, yeah. Along with the Cody Rivers show, which yeah. I felt lent this product sort of like a larger air of credibility in my mind because they were talking to Andrew and Mike from the Cody Rivers show.
Were we all four of us together for
no,
it?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No. But I saw the final product, and so they also interview some gal who I think was on like Last Comic Standing or something like that, who I didn't know.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw that. How'd we come out? Were we all right?
No, we're very funny and charming. In fact, they interview us
in the back stairwell. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember the interview. Yeah. So it's good that we're funny and charming. Cody Rivers show. Let me just say, you know, apropos of nothing, what a great thing that we got a chance to see them live a couple times.
It's a shame, too, because they do. I mean, it's been like 20 years since they had their heyday here in Seattle. That was sort of like one of, when Cody Rivers was performing routinely around here, that was like one of the high watermarks for Seattle sketch comedy.
Yeah, and people at the top of their game. Yeah. At the time that you're seeing them, it was great. The Pajama Men were great, too. They weren't from Seattle. So it didn't feel... Well, I guess Cody Rivers' show is Bellingham, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's Seattle adjacent. Thing is, I never got to know the Pajama Men. Talented MFers. But the thing that makes the Cody Rivers show even better is if you know them, they are the nicest guys.
Yes, exactly. What you would hope would be... I mention this all the time, and, you know, my apologies if John Hamm was actually really mean to people and... all that, but all of my interactions with him when I was a student with him were great. You know, people asked me, what was he like? I didn't know him that well, but he was seen at the time that I was there as being largely talented. Like, people, right. he was one of the better people in the program, and he was super nice. Didn't have any reason to be, but he was, you know, how you would hope he was, which was cool.
That's the same. Everything I've heard about Hugh Jackman is that he also is like a genuinely nice dude.
Yeah.
There's a clip. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like a red carpet interview of like maybe like one of the Wolverine movies. And this guy comes up to talk to Hugh about, you know, talking about like movie and blah, blah, blah. And Hugh Jackman's like, I don't know if you remember me, but I used to teach you your PE. Are you keeping up with your push-ups and all that? And he's like, Hugh Jackman, this big, big movie star, recognizes a dude that he taught in like primary school however many years ago. So you watch that and you're like, oh, Hugh Jackman, you know, you look like you'd be a good friend.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what you want. Jennifer Pratt, you know her, my wife. very talented, has put up with me for a full-on, you know, I would say it's going to be 18 years at our next anniversary.
18 years.
October 9th, which is crazy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you've been together before that, so I mean, that's just when you got married.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we weren't...
So she's put up with you a lot longer than that.
Well, yeah, but we weren't really dating that... I think we got married, I want to say like 6 months after we...
I do remember it was fast.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those situations where when you get it, you're just like, oh yeah, this is good. Now the thing is, I was on medication when we were courting, so in a way, is it like the Changeling where you know?
I don't know. So you were saying she's put up with you for 18 years?
Yeah, or more. As we could say, one of those things of every once in a while, you know, when we're just sitting around the house or whatever, I just remember things that she's done, and I'm like, this is amazing. I can't believe that I'm here. And also, we need to get out of the town,
the house,
to a place where, So. This is just, like I said, I'm not going to get too much into personal stuff, but just saying again, because it's a good to benchmark and to say stuff out loud. I don't think Betty's ever going to drive. Like, she has my skill in driving, and she does not have two parents who are willing to just keep putting her in cars until she either gets better or dies, which is what happened to me. So the key is to move to a place where there's good public transportation.
Yeah, and not and so much in your little suburb of Edwardsville.
Right, exactly. I mean, here's the thing. There is public transportation, right? From our house.
But the bus comes every hour.
Right. From our house, there you can walk. I'll time it sometime and see how far. You can walk from our house to a bus, like, not just a bus stop, but a bus, like, center. Yeah. And then from there, you could take a bus to St. Louis, and that bus to St. Louis will probably get to St. Louis 3 hours later, right? Not great.
Ouch. That's your whole day right there.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see how it all works out. But that's something, and I honestly would do well to be in a city with good public transportation as well. Having a car would be great, because Jennifer can drive it. As needed, but I don't know. The big thing is that staying here for one more year while Betty gets through school is, I think, smart.
Yeah,
you know, there
I mean, if Betty likes her school, like, I mean, my parents moved between my sophomore and junior years of high school, and we moved far away, but not that far away. So I kept going to my same high school for the last 2 years. And also, I wasn't the kind of kid who would do well in a new environment.
Yep. I feel the same. I feel the same way. I feel as though, you know, she's in with the band here and, you know, knows people and all that. And it makes sense. So we'll see. We'll see. I know that I keep on mentioning it. It's just a lot of it, I think, is to get myself used to the idea as well. I mean, that's part of it, I think. So that I'm ready to move as well.
Yeah.
If that's what happens. Which it could. Hey, speaking about which, guess what I've started doing? Changing the filters in the furnace here, which I probably should have been doing since I moved in.
You're supposed to do that every year, Paul.
Yeah, but I'm renting.
That was my job at Mr. House, because I lived in the basement and the furnace was right there. And that was one of my annual jobs, was switching out the air filter. And I think I didn't know that was my job for the first like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And so that furnace, that filter was pretty gnarly when I pulled it out.
Yeah, same sort of thing. You know, but you deal with what you can. Hey, speaking of dealing with what you can, we've got about 2 more minutes. And I'm guessing, I mean, I normally check, no interactions happening, right?
Nothing whatsoever, as a matter of fact.
Thing. Yeah, so...
Nope.
Oh, just follow up for the people that missed it from the last time. The guy that we were talking about, McCarthy, is now the Speaker of the House.
Oh. After 15 votes.
Yep.
15
rounds of voting, yeah. So, it's all right. And here's... This is the big thing. If I'm not mistaken... The Republicans who weren't voting him in weren't voting him in because he wasn't fascist enough. Am I close?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, he the hardline right wingers of the party wanted to institute rules that actually weaken McCarthy's power as Speaker. But because he wanted to be Speaker so badly, he caved to them.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, interesting.
Yeah. There's actually a rule. I may be getting some details wrong, but there's one rule that they said only one member of Congress can call for a vote and pass to remove the Speaker. So, if, say... one of the hard right-leaning members of Congress don't like what McCarthy's doing, they can remove him and put some, I don't know what the process is. Do you vote for somebody else? Do they just put in somebody? It's very, it's going to be, it's going to be an ugly 2 years.
Yikes. Okay. Well, good.
Yeah.
Good fun in the place.
The House of Representatives.
Also wanted to note, I think I might have mentioned this. I have the book, 1,000 Places to Visit Before You Die or something like that.
Annex Theater, number one.
I'm on page 60. Hey, done and done. On page 60, which is Ireland. And so I haven't left the British Isles yet, but I've been through...
Does it start there? It just kind of spirals out from
like, so there's London? So London, Scotland, Ireland. Oh, London, Scotland, Wales, I think, and then Ireland, something like that. So I've been reading about all these places, and you know, this is the thing: is I look at this and go, yeah, that might be nice, but each and every one of these places, right, represents a once in a lifetime travel thing for me. Like expensive plane tickets and all that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna wait until
I
read.
Make it one trip.
Yeah. Read the visit all 1,000 places.
Because you got that kind of cash and time.
Exactly. So, or I'm just gonna live for a really long time. That's also possible. I was thinking about that though. I mean, what if? Like, again, caring for Betty and Jennifer really makes it, like, a big change. But if you got over the idea of living in a house and, you know, all the things, food, shelter, all that, you could radically change your life very quickly. Just walk away from something and now all of a sudden you're in another place. But it's a good way to get victimized, I think. And
yeah, I mean, personally, I just don't have the survival skills to like last a night without having the keys to my apartment, you know?
I think you and I have talked about that, and I don't want to get, you know, too much further, but there is this fear that I had when I was in Seattle that one day my key wouldn't work. And I wouldn't have my phone, like I would just need like two little things in my routine to break. And all of a sudden I'm homeless.
Yeah.
I was one of my biggest fears, the traveling salesman who got hit on the head in a train in Baltimore and ended up living on the streets for 5 years until his wife recognized him at a, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. Ah, I smell food. And with that...
And on that cheery note...
Yes. Ben, I do smell food. It's not a stroke happening.
It's not.
Hey,
we're having burnt toast for dinner. All right, Paul.
Okay,
a good week. Keep it wrong,
Ben.
Paul.
Hey, by the way, we got to change the name of this episode now. To instead of TMI, it's burnt toast for dinner. but no, all right. Thanks, Ben. Talk to you later.
Keep it wrong.
Keep it wrong. Bye.
And we're clear.